चर्चम शतीक्षा चौथी भाषे भगवान मिहिरा उक्षित वाला काकर चरा कटोरा and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Bo flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. Translation responsively. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Bo flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous. And he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. Purple. When the Lord is offered prayers by his devotees, his transcendental activities are described. Here are some of the transcendental features of Lord Bo. As the residents of the upper three planetary systems offered their prayers to the Lord, it is understood that his body expanded throughout the sky, beginning from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, or Satchaloka. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita that his eyes are the sun and the moon. Therefore, his very glance over the sky was as illuminating as the sun or the moon. The Lord is described herein as Mahidra, which means either a big mountain or the sustainer of the earth. In other words, the Lord's body was as big and as hard as the Himalayan mountains. Otherwise, how is it possible that he kept the entire earth on the support of his white tusks? The poet Jayadev, a great devotee of the Lord, has sung of the incident in his prayers for the incarnations. Vasanti Dashana Shikare Trani Tava Lagna Shashini Kalanka Kaleva Nimagna Kesha Vidrita Shukara Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. All glories to Lord Keshava, Krishna, who appeared as the ball. The earth was held between his tusks, which appeared like the scars on the moon. Om Gyan Timimandasya Gyan Chaya Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Taismai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Tapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganatam Sarvetam Sarvabhutam Krishna Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Guna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopecha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosite Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radha Vrindavana Shri Vrishvanu Sase Devi So the verse again. Ukshiptavala kachara katora Satavidhunvan karoma shatvak Kurahatam ras sitadamshta iksha Jyoti vabhase bhagavan mihidra. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Bo flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. So a very descriptive verse today of Lord Bo in his pastime of rescuing the earth. So before he went down into the water of the Garbhodak Ocean, it's described today that Lord Bo flew in the sky. So this is a In this particular verse, we find confirmation of the, you might have heard of the, sometimes when people want to express their disbelief, and what do they say? They say, oh yeah, and pigs might fly. So here we find today that pigs do fly. And Lord Gaur flew in the sky, slashing his tail. So very, and it's very, just like Krishna's pastimes or any other form of the Lord, as we can relish these descriptions and think about them. You know, this form of the Lord, Lord Gaur, is taking up the whole, practically the whole universe. What is it? Expanded throughout the sky, beginning from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka. So that's very big Gaur. And can't really conceive of what that would be like. But then again, we know that Mahavishnu is who is just a, you know, expansion of an expansion of Lord Krishna. Just the universes are coming out of his body like little bubbles in the ocean. So for Lord Gaur to be as big as a universe is not so incredible or amazing. It's just, of course, he's, you know, he's Mahavishnu, he's bigger than all of the universes. Also we see that Lord Gaur, he flew in the sky, but there's no description of his having wings. So this is a very, you know, the transcendental feature of the Lord, that he can fly without wings. So as His Holiness Devi Maharaj was describing, that we actually love to glorify wonderful qualities and, you know, heroic activities and superhuman deeds of people. It's kind of all over the news that if someone rescues someone or kicks, you know, Australia is, you know, obsessed with AFL football, so if someone one weekend, some big star athlete, football player, if they kick 8 goals, that's like so glorious. Like, you know, I grew up, you know, following football all the time, and there's so many stars like Tony Lockett and Jason Dunstall. These are, you know, they just kind of like, they're so powerful. They're like, they're actually, usually the forward players, they're much bigger than other players. They kind of, you know, they're quite chunky, and they kind of push everyone out the way to get the ball, and so they get a good position in front of the goals and kick so many goals, and everyone's just like in ecstasy glorifying them. So and then at the end of the year, if they do that without getting a getting reported to the tribunal, then they can eligible to win a medal for being the best player of the year. So everywhere, we just love to glorify people and who are, you know, have these wonderful qualities or somehow some kind of opulence, even if it's but we don't really realize that these opulences that people possess are just in a very minute minute portion. They are actually you know, if we can see that logically, you know, people like to glorify all these people, but you know, God or a supreme person, then no way, he died long ago. So this is actually very illogical. People think that spiritual life is kind of vague and illogical, just unproductive and got nothing better. It's very wishy-washy. But actually, we understand that spirituality is a science, and it's very logical and reasonable. So we can see that if a person has some opulence, he does some beauty or some strength, something And then we see that another person has a bit more beauty or strength. And so then it's very logical to reason that, okay, you know, these qualities and opulences, they're possessed by a person. And if you keep on increasing that opulence, keep on increasing, right? More beauty, more wealth, more and more and more. And then, so we can come to the end and say that, conclude, you know, scientifically, that opulence is also, must be possessed by a person. But that person is different to us because to possess unlimited beauty or unlimited strength, they also must be unlimited. So this is just a logical conclusion that, you know, the opulences and qualities are there and they can increase and expand without limit. So, you know, every year people somewhere around the world, they're having fashion shows and beauty contests and see who is the most beautiful according to their mundane conceptions. So, you know, they're kind of picking hairs and say, oh yes, that person has nice features, but this person has more. And so go on increasing, and then in the same way we can see that with the Lord, that He's the most beautiful out of everyone, and the most, the strongest and the wealthiest, most renounced, etc. So, yeah, but people don't, you know, care to learn about this kind of logic. So the Lord, even as a boar, He possesses all these opulences, and so even as a boar, He is a transcendental person. So being a person doesn't just mean that we have a human form. It means that being a person means we have personal qualities, and therefore all of the avatars are transcendental personalities, who they're like embodying some transcendental qualities. Just like there's so many incarnations of Matsya, fish, and Korma, tortoise, and they're all Shimadevs, they're all transcendental persons, even though they have a form of a, appears to be an animal form. So, and also, that's the Supreme Lord, and we ourselves being parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, small samples, we are also persons. Not just because we're in a human body, but because constitutionally, we're spiritual persons underneath these gross and subtle material coverings are actually spiritual personalities. So therefore we can understand that animals have personality too, because they are persons, they are spiritual beings, but covered by a different kind of form. And so therefore personality is originally an intrinsic quality of the spirit soul. And so personality originally is not material. So our original spiritual personality becomes covered in the material world. And thus we exhibit, now we're exhibiting just a mundane version of our original personality. And this mundane version that we're exhibiting is just based on exploitation of others and acting for our own selfish motivations, our selfish sense gratification. So therefore we're chanting Hare Krishna and purifying our contaminated consciousness, our contaminated personality, and reawakening our spiritual, real personality, which is selfless and has all good qualities. So, but when we introduce the quality of envy, then that's what kills personality. Envy and personality don't go together. So as Prabhupada explains, that the impersonalists, my buddies, they accept a supreme source. But they pray, "O Lord, you are so great. You are so great that you have no arms or legs. And you're so great that you have no mouth and no ears, no eyes and no nose." So Prabhupada is very funny. He, you know, "But you're still your everything, and I'm also everything." And so Prabhupada says, you know, what kind of glorification is this? This is, you're saying that God is deaf, dumb, blind and lame. So that's not glorification, that's offensive. So therefore, it's, we understand that this Mayavad philosophy, although impersonalism and you know, the personal philosophy, up to a point, they're concurring. They have they're in agreement on several points, that material world is suffering and we're not the body. But they say, you know, we are spirit, we are everything, but we say, no, we're individual spirit. So at this point, it's where it's a serious deviation, that instead of glorifying God by their prayers, they're offending God by their prayers. And so, you know, there's no hope for spiritual progress if with that offensive mentality, being envious of the Supreme Lord. You know, so the best they can, you know, Krishna still reciprocates with everyone. So they want to extinguish their personality and have no personality, so Krishna allows them to merge into the Brahmajyoti and just shanti and be peaceful, get out of this material misery until they're bored and have to come back and open hospitals and so on. So, oh, sorry, I forgot to get a Gita. Can I just get a Gita? In this very nice explanation of this concept in Bhagavad Gita, that you know, with this idea of personality and impersonality, as I was saying, that personality is originally a spiritual quality. It's not a feature of the soul. It's not a material conception. But people have this idea that personality is a mundane concept, and a, you know, it's a bad thing. So it's very nicely explained in the purport and verse to 4.10, well-known verse. So Krishna says, "Vitaraga maya krodha manmaya mam upashvita bhavo jnana tapasa puta madhavam agata." Being free from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taken refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So I'll read some of the purport because it's just like, you know, spot on, basically, Prabhupada's explanation. So Prabhupada writes, "As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it's almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep this same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, The conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they're informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all, being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry, and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their effective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of a spiritual personality, personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. So he goes on to describe that we need to take shelter of Krishna, guided by the spiritual master, and then he describes the stages of bhakti yoga from Shraddha to Prema. These different contaminations of someone's too attached to material life, therefore they neglect spiritual life, or they're fearful of spiritual personality and individuality, therefore they take to impersonalism and Mayavada philosophy and they want to merge, or they just become angry at all of these, they say maybe they're interested in spiritual life, but they see there's so many contradictions, so many bogus people, and no clear knowledge, so they become angry and frustrated and take to intoxication. They want to do something spiritual, but it's just like they have no avenue for that, so they become frustrated. So these three things, Prabhupada says, have to be given up, and that happens by this is what Prabhupada is gifting us through his books, this clear and scientific knowledge of spiritual life. And therefore people can take shelter of that knowledge and feel sheltered and safe in that knowledge that yes, it's okay, I am a person and God is a person, we have an eternal relationship, and then they can execute devotional service in full confidence. So Prabhupada writes that we have to follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. So this only happens in the association of devotees. No one can practice all of these rules and regulations outside of the association of devotees. Maya is too strong. Dadi Hesha Gunamai. This three modes of material nature are very difficult to overcome. No one can expect to overcome material nature by practicing spiritual life on their own. They're just hallucinating, or they're just imagining that they're so powerful that they can attain strength in spiritual life. So on Sunday, as we know, it's Balaram Panim. So Lord Balaram is known as the source of spiritual strength and the original guru. So therefore, all of our gurus in spiritual life, initiating and instructing, are representing Lord Balaram. And therefore, in the association of devotees, when we're inquiring and associating favorably, then we gain spiritual strength through that association. And if we want to gain more spiritual strength, then we just have to stay in the association of devotees and be proactive in the association of devotees, to actively seek out guidance and inspiration. Maybe we're doing all of our practices okay, but we need to keep up our enthusiasm for that practice. So we hear from devotees and hear from the Bhagavatam and gain inspiration to keep going. So then in our preaching also, this is a very important topic, that we want to encourage people to associate with devotees. We're giving our association as devotees, and then also we want to make people favourable to associating with devotees. Therefore, that's a very key responsibility, that if someone is, we're actually representing the best devotee, Srila Prabhupada, and representing all of so many devotees. So we need to be very careful to properly represent them, and through our example, and be very sensitive and, in a way, gentle when interacting with people. I mean, what to speak of non-devotees, even ourselves as devotees, we have so many of these attachments to material life, fear of a personal spiritual identity, and frustration. These things are also lingering in our hearts. So in our exchanges with devotees as well, and teaching devotees, we need to be mindful of this too. But especially with the non-devotees, because they're just really, really materially absorbed. And if we kind of speak in a wrong way or act carelessly somehow, not recognizing and acknowledging that person, that they have their different conceptions, even though they may be misconceptions, but still, if we kind of trample on them, in a sense, like be a bit harsh in our preaching or something, then they're immediately going to reject us. And once they reject us, they've rejected the whole, devotional life and everything. So kind of when we're associating with people, then we're that link to Krishna, basically, and to devotional service. So we have to ask ourselves then, what would be pleasing to Prabhupada? How should I behave with this person that will be pleasing to Prabhupada? And not just, say something that we know out of pride to satisfy our own ego. But actually try to, like Srimad Bhagavatam, as we know, is the postgraduate study of spiritual science. So that's a very elevated thing. And it's not something that we readily disseminate among non-devotees. We better to concentrate on, Bhagavad Gita, or if we do want to explain something from Bhagavatam, maybe some pastime, we have to think, how can I tailor this for the person that I'm communicating to, or the group audience that I have. So we find that as well in our preaching and interacting with people, that it must be extremely personal, and first of all, understand where is this person at with their spiritual life, what misideas do they have, and what maybe, good things do they know about spiritual life. Maybe many people have some spiritual background already, if they grew up in a Christian family perhaps. So they may already have some idea of bhakti, and So we just got to see where someone is at and go from there. So Krishna says in chapter 3, verse number 26, good one for preaching. Nabhuti bhedam janayet agyanam kama sanginam joshiyet savakamani vidvan yukta samacharan. So as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men attached to the fruitive results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. So we don't want to unnecessarily disrupt people's minds because they're already disrupted. As it's described that this is the foremost characteristic of Kali Yuga, that the people are always disturbed. So why disturb them more? Just hearing about devotional service or, you know, that God is a person, all these things, that people get disturbed. They're envious. So it's good we just try to engage people in service, maybe, and give them prasadam and just do whatever it takes to keep them associating with devotees, because that will eventually purify them. And we see that, you know, I know myself, I had so many impersonal conceptions before I came to devotional service, and you know, very much attached to that knowledge. You know, that you know, the source of everything is just impersonal, because, you know, they use it's like a faulty logic that everything here, as was described in that purport, that everything here is temporary and it's subject to degradation, and so that's, we see that in forms in the material world, so therefore there must be no form in the ultimate sense in the spiritual world. But that's just transplanting a material conception onto the spiritual reality. Actually, the spiritual reality is something different, that there is spiritual form that is eternal and full of variety. So also in our, as it said, Prabhupada writes in the first sentence in the purport that when the Lord is offered prayers by his devotees, his transcendental activities are described. So this is one, you know, maybe a high level of devotee who are offering prayers to the Lord, glorifying him. And in maybe in the initial stages of devotional service, then we're praying more for ourselves, not really praying to glorify Krishna. So that's described in Gita also, that there are four kinds of people who approach Krishna, and the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and the seeker after the absolute truth. So, but still Krishna says that they are all magnanimous souls, and he accepts everyone. So even if our prayers currently are, you know, impure or tainted with some personal motivation, then still Krishna accepts us, and we get purified by that approaching Krishna. And then, therefore, when we, it's not a problem to just kind of, as Maharaj also was saying, that we just accept whatever level we're on, and try to see how we can make advancement, but also just be humble and accepting where we're at in our spiritual life, and offering prayers to Krishna on that level. And as you know, the ultimate prayer, the ultimate conclusion of our prayers is to engage in Krishna's service. Therefore, Hare Krishna is called the Maha Mantra, the great mantra. So, you know, beyond just glorifying the Lord, and you know, there's that story when a devotee was, you know, standing at the front gate of maybe Vrindavan temple, you know, glorifying Prabhupada every day when he would come into the temple grounds. And then Prabhupada just stands there like, you got some service to do, or what? Are you going to just stand there all day offering prayers? So this is the outcome of our prayers, or the ultimate goal of our prayers is to engage in active service to Krishna. As Prabhupada translated the Maha Mantra, that, O my Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. So all of these prayers where, you know, the great sages of the upper planets are glorifying, in later verses in this chapter, there are many verses by the sages glorifying the Lord Bhava's transcendental qualities and his supreme position. So the purpose of this is to, you know, therefore, because Krishna is so great and because he is so extraordinarily wonderful, then that inspires in us a feeling that this person is so great and transcendental that I want to serve them. So this is the natural outcome. And not only the Lord, but the Lord's devotees too. We have so many prayers offering to the Lord's devotees at Mangalati time, Guru Puja, and you know, because we're not, we can't actually approach the Lord directly. So we approach the representative, the pure representative of Krishna, and seek their service. And that is as good as serving Krishna, by serving the spiritual master and devotees. So all these prayers that we see throughout Bhagavatam, in 10th canto, currently reading Akuru's prayers to Krishna and Balaram. So this one devotee was reminding me that Akura perfected the art of the devotional art of prayers, Vandanam. So all these prayers and in prayers by Prahlad Maharaj and you know, Prithu Maharaj, when Lord Vishnu comes to the sacrificial arena, the goal of all these prayers is to serve Krishna. And therefore, this we can remember this when we're praying, that, you know, our material situation will come and go, and, you know, really that we want to pray for service to Krishna and do something for him in a pure way for his pleasure. So I'll stop there and see if there's any comments or questions about Lord Bhava flying in the sky. Yes. First canto, sixth canto, what was the other one? Second, was that? Oh, okay. Yeah, don't see them around as much these days, but yeah, that was over there. I guess, you know, yeah, I don't have a great answer for that, but, yeah, Krishna, I mean, I've heard that Krishna book, Spiritual Master said is 10th canto plus Bhagavad Gita. So there's plenty of foundational philosophy in Krishna book. And Also in Bhagavatam we find that in so many verses and pastimes and in Prabhupada's purports that he will, the first thing he will say in a purport is a verse from Bhagavad Gita. So I guess just as like to introduce people to devotional service and kind of inspire them to associate with devotees, because once they come into the association of devotees, then you know the first thing they're going to learn is Bhagavad Gita or even science of self-realization or something. And just learning that we're spirit, we're not matter, and so even though they may have, you know, that may be the first book they read, Kangesha Puru read Nectar of Devotion first up. But still, you know, the first thing that we learn is the foundational stuff in Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, it's foundational, but it's still very advanced. And I guess Canto 6, describing the pastime of Ajamil, right, in the beginning part. So this is the mission of Lord Chaitanya, to spread the chanting of the holy names, so to enlighten people about that process. Yeah. You had a question? It's kind of just a quite common idea, misconception that spiritual life means freedom, or you know, just unrestricted sense gratification. That's only material life, unrestricted sense gratification. So people think that if you're following some rules and regulations, acting in prescribed ways, following a particular path, and you know, in a very fixed way, and not deviating at all, then they think, oh, you're just denying your personality, maybe extinguishing your personality. So that's a very real concern that people have. So we have to be careful about that. And it's these concerns that people have, I guess, they won't kind of go away just by a brief explanation, or you know, say, no, don't worry about it, that's just the wrong idea. It's really only in that association of devotees that they'll get, you know, Krishna will remove that doubt from their heart. So we can initially kind of pacify that fear they have and say, no, it's okay. You can be who you are, but just do it for Krishna's pleasure, or for a higher purpose, you might say. Just say, no, it's okay. Individuality is fine. It's actually we encourage individuality, but in a selfless way, not like a selfish individuality where you're just doing everything for yourself, for your own pleasure. So we can say that in a beginning stage, but until they, you know, actually start associating with devotees in a more serious way and taking up the process, then, because even devotees will kind of think like this. So it takes time for an artist to get removed from our heart by practicing. Yeah. Anything else? Thank you very much. Quantrai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nitai Gaurav Brahmanandi.